From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The family of CIA whistleblower Jeffrey Sterling has demanded that he receive immediate medical treatment in prison for a serious heart condition. These calls have gone largely unanswered. His wife, Holly Sterling, told RT America's Anya Parampil that prison officials will now consider having a cardiac specialist see her husband, but it could take up to a month before that happens.
Jeffrey was contacted, and they are actually going to put in a request for him to be seen by an outside cardiac specialist. This is great news, however, it is not immediate. He has to put in the request, and it needs to go through the utilization review committee prior to Jeffrey receiving any services. That could take up to 30 days. Jeffrey first had issues on June 21st, 2016. He does have a history of AFib, which he was hospitalized for 4 days in 1999. So on the 21st of June, he went to the medics and he presented with symptoms of a potential heart attack. They did do an EKG. They stated that the results of the EKG were inconclusive, that it potentially could have a blockage. They were not sure because it could have been due to misplaced electrodes. Jeffrey then stated they were supposed to draw blood, to which they did not. He had another episode then in July where he went back. He was having shortness of breath. Again, the same signs of potential cardiac distress. And they subsequently really did nothing for him. So that's when I began to write letters to the warden. I initiated an email to the warden. Basically, they responded stating they did everything they needed to do for my husband. They denied that he had any kind of history of cardiac issues, which was completely untrue because upon entry, he was supposed to get an EKG, a baseline EKG, which they never did do.
So to clarify, your husband may be having a heart attacks in prison, and the tests have never been taken to the point where even he was taken outside of the facility or received any sort of immediate medical attention, which is what you're calling for at this point. And still, it might be delayed 30 days.
Yes, that is correct. Basically, that after they took the EKG, since Jeffrey's symptoms had started to subside, they stated that possibly he was dehydrated, that he needed to drink more water. They started talking about how this can be predispositions of African Americans, but didn't really specify what those predispositions of what kind of potential health issues were, and sent him on his way. And so it really wasn't until I got the public and media involved that we had any kind of response.
More Clinton email leaks from WikiLeaks. Press TV's Kanish Fatima has more.
The founder of the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks says his organization plans to release more information linked to the campaign of U.S. Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton. Julian Assange says he thinks the data could be a game changer in the November election. In July, the whistleblowing website released hacking files showing the Democratic National Committee favored Hillary Clinton over her primary challenger and anti-establishment candidate Bernie Sanders. The release during the Democratic National Convention, where Clinton was officially named the party's presidential nominee, prompted the committee's chairwoman to step down. WikiLeaks publishes leaked materials, mostly from governments. Assange has been living in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for 5 years now to avoid extradition to Sweden, where he faces sexual assault accusations. He denies the allegations.
And for more on that, we spoke with Margaret Kimberly, whose column at blackagendareport.com under the heading Freedom Rider is entitled this week, The Clinton and Powell War Criminal Charade. Margaret, welcome back. Nice to talk with you.
Thank you, Don.
So let's see, this week's Freedom Rider column, The Clinton and Powell War Criminal Charade. Yeah.
Yes. This week, this past week, Hillary Clinton has a huge problem with these emails.
Yep.
When she was Secretary of State, she used a private email server for all of her State Department business. Excuse me, which was a clear violation of law, and it was proof that she was hiding something. And it's pretty clear she was commingling State Department and Clinton Foundation emails, and she was trying to hide that fact and trying to hide her Clinton Foundation emails in case they were subpoenaed or anything.
Yeah.
So now this is a problem for her, as she should be coasting to the presidency with very little problem. Trump is faltering, but these emails are a concern. She has been investigated by the FBI. Of course, Obama wants her to succeed him, so they made sure that the FBI director said he found no reason to investigate. He contradicted himself. He said if anybody else did it, they'd be prosecuted.
Right.
But then said he wasn't going to prosecute her. Except there's this stuff hanging out there. WikiLeaks has clearly gotten some information. They already got the DNC emails. They've tried to preempt the release of any new material by saying it's all Russians and Donald Trump working with the Russians.
Right.
But this is a huge problem. So a Clinton acolyte steps forward, Joe Connison, who's a writer. He's working on about to be published, a biography of Bill Clinton. Yeah. He steps forward and repeats something that she had used before as a defense, which is Colin Powell did it too.
Right.
And it was interesting for two reasons. He recounts how shortly after she became Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, who was Bill Clinton's Secretary of State, had this dinner party at her home with Colin Powell and Hillary Clinton and Henry Kissinger and Condoleezza Rice, which is interesting because it proves something that I and others have been saying for a long time, that there are no Democrats or Republicans in foreign policy. There's just straight continuity, people... go through a lot of changes deciding whom to vote for and making the case for their person, and in reality you have no change at all, especially in foreign policy. So Connison, in defense of her, says, well, at this dinner party, Colin Powell, apparently over dessert, no less, said that he had used a private email and it helped State Department communication and so forth, but he used it in a very limited way. She used only private email, and by the time she became Secretary of State, that was illegal. When Powell was Secretary of State, he was not violating any laws. But so the timing of this was interesting, that Connison steps forward to try to get her out of this mess. So then you had this public food fight between Powell and Clinton, where he defends himself. But still in a very limited way, because they're all part of the gang. And it's, you know, I think of the mafia and Omerta and, you know, the vow of silence and don't snitch on your fellow criminals. So he was quoted a couple of days later. First, he said he had no recollection of the conversation. Then he said, well, I sent her this memo and I told her that I had done it too, and that memo could be in the FBI files. Then he publicly said he was a little rankled, I suppose, and said, her people are trying to pin this on me. Now, it's interesting that he said her people. He didn't say her, because she's about to be the president, and they're all part of the gang. So even though I'm sure he's pissed off at being shoved under the bus, he didn't actually come out and criticize her. So, there's several things going on there. The other thing is, of course, many people were offended, especially black people, that she was trying to blame it all on Powell. But he should not be a figure of sympathy. Mm-hmm. Lest we forget, his criminality goes back decades. Someone reminded me yesterday that when he was in the Army in the early 70s, he was one of the people who tried to cover up the My Lai massacre.
That's right.
This was in 1970, I believe. I may be wrong about the year, where an army unit massacred a Vietnamese village. And Colin Powell, in his capacity at that time, was one of those who tried to cover it up. So then, of course, as time goes by, he becomes National Security Advisor, Secretary of State. And what does he do then? Well, he does whatever his bosses, the presidents, tell him to do.
Yeah.
So he kidnapped President Aristide in Haiti, lied about it, lied to, this is the last decent thing the Congressional Black Caucus ever worked on together, trying to protect the Haitian government, the democratically elected government, which we, you know, United States foreign policy always claims it's about democracy. But he kidnapped Aristide, lied to the Black Caucus about it and others about it, and most infamously, at the United Nations, he made the case for war against Iraq, dramatically holding up this vial and said a vial of anthrax could kill a jillion people. Well, he's the one who killed a jillion people.
Right. That was his Adlai Stevenson moment there at the UN Security Council.
Yes. So he's a criminal, too. She's a criminal as Secretary of State, destroying Libya, starting the process of destroying Syria, coup in Honduras, continuation of the occupation of Haiti. I'm sure I'm leaving out a lot.
Right.
But the secretaries of state, these people are the worst criminals in the country.
Right.
Instead of being held up as these paragons of success and virtue and prominence, they should just be seen as the crooks that they are.
Yeah, just for clarity's sake, those last recitals from Libya forward you were talking about, in particular Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
Yes. Yes. So what we have is this, you know, gossip and drama, but this is really a fight between two criminals, and we're going to see more of this from Hillary Clinton between now and November, because they don't know what WikiLeaks has. These new emails have emerged. It was in the press yesterday, so she has a huge legal and ethical problem. And it could keep her, could keep people from voting for her. It could suppress turnout. There are organizations, very conservative organizations like Judicial Watch. A judge ruled that she had to answer questions in writing, although she'll probably get to do it after Election Day. But their minds, you know, she's in a little minefield there between now and November to get through the goalpost.
Right.
So this is all very problematic. So we can expect more trying to blame other people for the decisions that she made, more propaganda about Donald Trump and or Russia, about WikiLeaks, all to try to protect her so she can become president.
Mm. Yeah, you know, an interesting the point is something that you specified towards the beginning. You know, you mentioned now the commingling of emails, but in fact, the review of the emails shows that that commingling of emails was a part of a larger project, which was the commingling of her office and the Clinton Foundation.
Yes. Yes, she was doing the business of the Clinton Foundation as Secretary of State. And she's... you know, she's a person who she has gotten away with a lot, so she thinks she can continue to. She didn't even, you know, use a go-between. She just thought she could get away with it, and that even if discovered, she could still get away with it. I mean, she took a huge risk, and for little benefit, well, to benefit the Clinton Foundation, which is not a traditional foundation. It's more like an influence peddling slush fund. So people gave money to this foundation to make sure they could get access to her and get some help from the U.S. government. I mean, it was just terribly corrupt. And the fact that she thought there would never be any question about the Secretary of State not using the State Department for her emails is just amazing to me. So she has this huge mess of her own making. And it's the one thing that could trip her up and keep her from being in the White House.
Yeah. It's funny watching the media parse this stuff. You know, in essence, one obvious crime, essentially, that's been committed is the fact that these this latest release of emails wasn't included. Some 15,000 or whatever it is emails were not included in the discovery demand made by the House of Representatives. When they said, mm-hmm. give us all the emails, and she said, here are all the emails, essentially under oath, that she didn't and it wasn't.
Correct. Correct. And this just points out the magnitude of the crime, the magnitude of what must be in them and how bad they must be that she wants to hold up it. You know, thousands of emails that she had to hide. Some she deleted. She deleted many thousands and tried to, and as a lawyer, and she's a lawyer also.
That's right.
To know how bad it is. I mean, she would be in contempt of Congress. I mean, that is perjury.
That's right.
I mean, as you said, in effect, that's under oath. She was ordered to turn over everything. So she could, you know, be inaugurated and be under investigation at the same time. So it's really horrible. There are a lot of reasons why she should not be president. But for her to enter the presidency under this legal cloud, I mean, she could become president and then be impeached. But they have circled the wagons, the corporate media, the Obama Justice Department, are all defending her to try to drag her over the finish line. It's all very dangerous too. And I, you know, she always was dangerous. She's certainly a hawk. It's clear that she wants to have her own war. She can't wait to try to go to war against Russia, which is no exaggeration, a threat to the entire world. Mm-hmm. And in trying to cover her tracks in this mess she created, she could be laying the groundwork for some sort of military aggression to try to cover it up. So it makes her doubly dangerous as a new president.
You know, and just to contextualize this whole thing, you know, as many violations of criminal law, essentially, that we're seeing perpetrated in front of us. I mean, the demand was public for those emails. The tender was public for those emails. And now the discovery of the missing emails out of that all happens right in front of us. And apparently it escapes the attention of analysts who don't look at the basis of the claims that it's illegal activity. They just, it's not such a big deal compared to the crimes committed by the people at that dinner. You list Kissinger. He killed millions of people in Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. Madeleine Albright, who said it was worth it for, it was 500,000 Iraqi children that mm-hmm. died through the use of sanctions and bombing of Iraq during the Clinton administration, during her time as Secretary of State. She said that was worth it. Powell has Haiti, you mentioned already, and Iraq. He's responsible for that. Rice is a member of the team that does this stuff. You could see mm-hmm. the things she did at the UN, for example, herself. And Hillary Clinton, we saw, he died, and Syria. Let's invade Syria, and by the way, let's have a war with Russia and China.
Yes, exactly. So it's, if there is a silver lining, I think it makes, people like us make our case about the United States and the true nature of our government and the danger it poses to the entire world. But they know this too. And so they increase, as we discussed last week, the smears of the Green Party ticket. Because the last thing they want is for Democrats, progressives who still buy into the lesser evilism and we must stop the Republicans and we have to vote for Democrat at any cost. The last thing they want is for people to start looking at alternatives. But that's exactly what needs to happen. This is reason number, 1,000,001 as to why the Democratic Party needs to be history. The Democratic Party is the problem, and it needs to be gone. And progressives need to be about the business of building up a new party to replace it, one that is truly a party of social justice domestically, and a party of non-aggression abroad, instead of Democratic Party is more like a marketing scheme than it really is a party that represents the interests of average people.
You know, there's an interesting article that your colleague Glenn Ford posted at blackagendareport.com called Clintonite Conspiracy Theories, and he picks through some of this stuff as well. And talks about how essentially the media and the Clinton campaign are trying to inoculate the electorate from the factual disclosures that are certain to come. I mean, Julian Assange is essentially saying, well, let's see, maybe we'll release this batch this week, and after that goes through the news cycle, another batch. And I'm assuming, as I think many are, that the most damning stuff is going to be released towards the end. That's how you do it. You just keep building. And
October surprise.
Yeah, the October surprise. And it seems that according to Glenn's thesis, and I agree. You know, facially, I think it proves itself that they're doing everything they can to try to inoculate the public against those disclosures as they come forward.
Oh, absolutely. I actually fear for Julian Assange's life. I have to say that crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Because they will find a way to keep her from being prosecuted. She is, after all, the candidate of the ruling classes. But he could make life very difficult for her and perhaps upset the apple cart. So the propaganda becomes more and more bizarre. Trump is a Russian agent, that he had a staffer who has since stepped down, who worked for the former president of Ukraine.
Elected president, by the way.
The elected president. Yes, elections don't mean anything when the United States wants to get somebody out. It doesn't matter if you're elected or not.
That's right.
Yanukovych, who, excuse me, it's true that this man, Paul Manafort, was a lobbyist. And this should be an issue, how Americans go all over the world influencing local politics. So he did work for Yanukovych, but it's not true that he was trying to bring him closer to Russia. He was trying to help him get reelected and broaden his base throughout Ukraine, and not just eastern Ukraine, which was his base.
And what he was doing was counseling him to draw him into the EU. So it was actually counter to the Russians.
Exactly. So it's, you know, there's a little tiny bit of truth, and then the rest of it's lies.
Yeah.
You know, and this is an opportunity for people to learn something about Ukraine, but no, we just get more lies so that, God help us, Hillary Clinton can become president. And Trump doesn't help himself any. He made a joke, although I didn't see what was wrong with it. He said he hoped the Russians kept hacking.
You know, me too, by
more.
The way. Sure, let them out.
Yes, exactly. If we need a foreign government to get us the truth, but of course that was
right.
He really stepped in it, and it, you know, so that was another excuse to attack him for things he had not done. You know, there are reasons to attack Donald Trump, but that's not one of them.
Not at all. Yeah.
So here we are with two candidates who are highly unpopular. Even people who are not politically aware and savvy, they know a stinker when they see one.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I have a theory that the turnout this November will be at a historic low.
Yeah,
I really believe it may be less than 50% or just barely above 50% of people, eligible voters who bother to vote.
And I suspect they're going to be voting differently for the first time in decades, so however that is. I can't predict how it'll be, but I think the former voting patterns of voting over abortion and the Supreme Court, although I'm seeing that one, the last one, a lot among my friends who are Democrats, them pointing out to me that, you know, my concern about foreign affairs when I invoke World War III as being a very possible consequence, that instead I should be focused on the Supreme Court, which is a very real thing. And you know, I do happen to read what comes out of the Supreme Court on a regular basis, and it's not just gay marriage, but it's many things that involve you know, cases that involve Wall Street's ability to loot, for example, you know, things that deal with banking law, things that deal with things that have a real material basis. And you'd be surprised reading that stuff, how the liberal conservative, quote unquote, break actually breaks on those questions.
So, yes. And it's, you know, but it's desperation. I think that, you know, the more rotten the Democratic Party becomes, the more people want to defend it and hang on for dear life, instead of saying, enough, let's start building something new, let's replace it. And that's the way I talk about it, because I think it's true. I don't want to dismiss people's concerns altogether, but the Democratic Party just doesn't deliver anything. I mean, Obama and the Democrats controlled Congress in 2009 and 2010. Aside from Obamacare, what did we get?
Nothing.
They raised the minimum wage 70 cents an hour. It could have been anything the Democrats wanted it to be. And clearly, they didn't want to raise it at all. So this is a slap-in-the-face increase, and that's what we are always told. Well, if they run, you know, if the Democrats have a majority, but then, of course, if they have a majority in the Senate, but it's not filibuster-proof, then there are more excuses. Well, you know, the Republicans can filibuster. Well, why don't Democrats do that?
Yeah, no kidding.
When the Republicans have a majority in the Senate, they get whatever they want.
They can't even
because
filibuster.
The Democrats just go along.
They can't even filibuster when they're in the majority. Half of the legislation that comes out of there, or better, when you have a Democratic majority, is written by the Republicans.
Exactly. And the DNC emails revealed one of the reasons Republicans win in state elections is that the Democrats raise money only for the presidency. They ignore races in state legislatures around the country. So they don't do anything. So you vote for a Democrat for president to protect abortion rights, but then the Democratic Party stabs you in the back and doesn't help Democrats get elected in the states, in the 50 states.
That's right.
So, you know, there are fewer and fewer arguments for holding your nose and considering them a lesser evil. I am quite confident, and I can say with no hesitation whatsoever that I'm voting green. And I think this is time to build something new, and it's time to jettison the Democrats all together. Black people especially suffer from this trap of the duopoly, and people are angry because Trump said, what do black people have to lose? Your lives are so bad. Well, it's actually a good question. Mm. I mean, our unemployment rate is astronomically high. We are living under these terrible conditions, and yet we will not let go of the Democratic Party because the Republicans are the white people's party. But we can create a new party, and it's time to let go of them.
Yeah, you know, on that last point, just to close, what's interesting to me is that the Democrats, including Obama, explain away a lot of the phenomenon that Trump cited, you know, with like paternalistic lecturing of the black community. And Trump wasn't doing that. He was saying, this is something I can fix, which implies very strongly this is something that's outside of the control. It's imposed upon the black community by power structure.
Yes, yes. And, it's so hard to know what Trump would or wouldn't do as president. But Obama didn't make, well, he didn't have to. Black people were happy to see a black president and voted for him, no matter what he said, no matter what he did. For a candidate to at all talk about the state of black America and how bad it is. Hillary Clinton hasn't done that. Well, she doesn't have to either, because we are clinging to this party, and most of our politicians are, and our big organizations are connected to the Democrats. So I was not offended by what Trump said. It's a good question. What do we have to lose? What do we have to show for supporting the Democrats? And the answer is not necessarily to support Republicans, but for, my God, I don't know what has to happen before we let go of the Democrats.
Columnist Margaret Kimberly, whose Freedom Rider column this week at BlackAgendaReport.com is entitled The Clinton and Powell War Criminal Charade. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.